Well, ladies and gentlemen, I trust that you had a good lunch, and it was just enhanced by the conversation that was happening at your table. What I'd like to do now is open the floor. This is the part of the forum where you have an opportunity to enter into some dialogue and pose questions to our presenter today. And I would ask that your comments be somewhat brief and be followed by a question that our speaker is able to respond to. So I'm going to start. I was also asked that you use the microphone so that it can be picked up by our viewers at home as well. But I'd like to start off some of this discussion by asking our speaker, in his experience in Togo, what did he perceive to be the greatest challenge in implementing this project?
Thank you, Diane. The biggest challenge I felt was probably when I returned, when we had to put together a presentation to convince some of the partners, financial partners, that this would be a good project to put into place. In other words, we had to convince partners. One of the partners that I did forget to mention a while ago was the Wild Rose Foundation. And the Wild Rose Foundation, they have a fairly active branch in international development. So we had to convince them through a presentation very similar to this that we did go to the site, we did go visit, we do have contacts at the other end, and how are the funds to be channeled over there? And the funds are channeled through our Rotary Foundation in Chicago, and it's the foundation people who then make sure that the funds do go to not someone's bank account, but a worthy organization at the other end. So, if anything, it was convincing the partners that this was a good project to embark on. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thanks, Bernie. You talked about Rotary's role, I guess, with the polio vaccinations. Do you have any idea approximately what sort of expense that has been? What sort of support Rotary has provided there? And also, who are the partners involved in that?
Right from the get-go in 1986, Rotary partnered with three organizations that I know you would be familiar with, World Health Organization, Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, and UNICEF. And since that period of time, Rotarians only the Rotarians around the world have contributed in excess of US $600 million. So there are a lot of individuals, there are a lot of clubs who will have functions specifically to raise funds for polio. I know the government of Canada, a couple of years ago, there was an initiative that for every dollar that the Rotarians would raise in the country, they would match it with $3. So there are a lot of other countries that have done that around the world as well. So it's spearheaded by the clubs and by the districts and by the Rotarians. And I mentioned as well a while ago that to get that final push, the 99% of polio is eradicated, that final 1%, they're thinking it's going to take another $150 million in the next couple of years to get that final 1%. And to be declared polio free, they cannot have a case detected for 2 years, and that's when the World Health Organization would certify the world as polio free. So there's still lots of dollars to be raised, and the final push is on.
My name is Ray Harris from the South Porcupine Hills. Before I embarrass myself, a comfort station is what I think it is?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, at the border crossing, you said there's a great number of people crossing, and if this is the only one, how do you handle the waste disposal, composting, water? Is there water facilities to wash their hands afterwards? That's what I'm interested in. Thank you.
Thanks. I'll expand on that. It's a health comfort station, sanitation station. There is shower facilities. There is water facilities so that people can do all of those things. You need to, when I was there, just picture the three areas at the border. There was military, It was Border Patrol, and there were customs officers. While there's a lot of commerce that goes back and forth across the border, the truckers and so on, there are also a lot of individuals who try to cross, and they don't have the paperwork identification that we do. So some of them would spend 2 or 3 days at the border, sleeping in the fields, with their young children. Most of these are mums, and that's who we wish to assist at the border crossing. So when I say it's a comfort station, it's almost like a clinic, shall I say a clinic. They do want to make sure that at times of the year when it's busiest, that the Rotary Club in Lome will ensure there's, I'm not sure if you can say medical staff there on a full-time basis, but they do want to make sure that if anybody is in need at the border, they would be assisted, because at the present time there's absolutely nothing there but a field. Thank you, Ray. You mentioned about disposal. One of the Rotarians in one of the clubs is an architect. And whenever we had to put the funding requests together, we had to submit plans. And included in those plans were the disposal and to make sure that this works the way it's intended to work. So all those plans need to be submitted as well. And on the technical side, we have substantial paperwork to support all of that. And so I think we're on our way. Yes.
Hi. I was surprised with the slides with the garbage right outside the homes or right in the middle of sort of foot traffic. I mean, I've lived in Africa for a few years, but not that area, and I hadn't seen it quite so close to the living area. Are there steps being taken to increase awareness of that type of, you know, the disease issues, or to do anything about that? Not necessarily by Rotary Club, but just generally, are there steps to sort of address that garbage problem?
It appears that way. I know the Rotary Club, but one of the projects that they were doing was cleaning up the beach. And cleaning up the beach, and they had containers that would pick up all of the waste, and then that would somehow be taken away from, I mean, along the beach is hotel strip and so on, but it's certainly not like we would see in the recreation areas that we're used to. But I never did meet with any of the civic officials. The locals are aware that this cannot continue in a city of 1.5 million with the heat and all of that brings with it. But it appeared that they wanted to take the garbage away from the residential areas and move it outside. But it's not like a dump that we would see here or that we would see in North America where the garbage is burnt. It's just deposited and left to accumulate. And that was very visible anywhere we drove in the city.
So people were literally throwing it outside their house? I mean, that's what it looked like on
that's
the
right.
slides.
That's right. Hmm. And there's no garbage pickup. It just accumulates. And then when it gets to a certain... I mean, one of the slides that I perhaps should have included was there was a garbage heap of maybe 30, 40 feet high right in the residential area, and the kids are up there playing, and they're scavenging for whatever it is they might need. And you could tell that they were police officers, security people, trying to get these individuals off the garbage piles, but it's just not what we would see here. Absolutely not. Thank you.
Dwayne Pendergast. My wife and I actually went on a driving vacation through there in 1973, and we stayed for a few days in a beautiful resort just outside of Lome. Do you know if anything has come of those resorts? Are they still there, providing opportunities for the locals or anything like that?
Thank you, Dwayne. Do you know where, was it right in Lome? I know there's some smaller towns east and west of Lome.
It was just east of Lome, I think. We had traveled there from Nigeria.
Probably closer to Anaho, and Anaho would be close to the border. In fact, those are the civic officials we were meeting with. We did see some areas that appeared to be resorts. But I was not able, I was not part of the activity that I was asked to do. So I did not see any of those resorts that we would consider resorts here in North America. They have some substantial hotels along the waterfront, but I wouldn't have recognized any of those that maybe you have seen 30 years ago.
We thought it was kind of a nice place after driving there from Nigeria, and it doesn't look like it's improved very much since.
The countryside is fabulous when you go visit the villagers. The hospitality and the looks on their faces when you're addressing them and you're trying to convince them that you're here to help them a little bit, they certainly open up. When I did visit the hospitals, when I did visit the schools, it's those institutions that were really in need of help. So even at the hospital, blood pressure kits, blood pressure, they're all held together with tape. You know, you just could not comprehend how they could safely treat their patients. I was asked to visit the burns unit because they're looking for equipment at the burns unit. And there was a young man in there, and he was a teenager. He had been robbed, and he didn't want to let the money go. So they set him on fire. And he was in bandages from his waist down. And when I visited the burns unit, he was on a bed that would... It was just a plastic cover on the bed. And just outside his room, there were three construction workers knocking down a wall. And there was dust everywhere, and they were taking shovels full of the concrete and full of the mortars and the bricks, throwing them into the wheelbarrow, and that would cause more dust. And that was only maybe 5 feet away, 6 feet away. Visiting with the schools, visiting with the principals, visiting with the educational directors, and they kept saying, we just need even a globe, even for world maps to show our kids photocopiers that didn't work. So, in terms of where do you start, it doesn't matter where you start. Would we ever fix it in our lifetimes? We know how the governments wish to react there. And so a combination of service clubs, combination of individual help, combination of government aid. Again, I referred to a while ago about 11 million people are to die with drought and starvation in Africa. Bill and Melinda Gates, their foundation, they're doing a lot of work as well. And they've targeted one country, I'm not sure which country, but they're hoping to eradicate malaria in one country. And I think their initial grant was about $20 million to help to eradicate malaria. So,
I'm really pleased to say I've been a good customer of Bill Gates.
There you go. Any other questions?
I have another question, and Bernie, you mentioned that Togo is under a dictatorship. I'd be really interested in hearing the kinds of things that you had to do to break down the barriers in terms of the political environment to pursue the project.
I'm just going to add a little bit of humor to that as well, because when I landed in Lomé, there were three planes that landed at the same time, and so I was going into customs to get my luggage and show the passport and so on, and I had this very tall military individual just tap me on my shoulder. He says, "Would you come with me, sir, and I'll have your passport and your vaccination card. Can I take that first?" And I thought, no, I don't think I better let this go. But they had recognized who I was when I had approached. And Rotary in those countries is very significantly different than Rotary in North America, what we would be used to. So again, I was able to get whisked right through customs and security. And the guy did relax a little bit and say, it's okay, we know who you are and you come here. And the Rotary emblem, and I'm wearing my Rotary pin here, and you'll see most Rotarians, whenever they're
going to a Rotary function will wear their pin. And every day when I was going to the sites, visiting the hospitals, visiting the schools, we had a Rotary emblem attached to the windshield. And again, we were stopped frequently by military, and they had their guns. And they would ask, who are you, and who are you here for, and who are you here with, and what are you here for? And I just had to point to the Rotary emblem, the Rotary logo. And that certainly helped. So whenever we mentioned we wanted to come and discuss some potential projects at the hospitals or at the schools, and we mentioned we were with Rotary, it helped a great deal. Just because of the, shall I use the word, maybe status or influence that Rotary would have in those third world countries. It is a military dictatorship. The individual who was there at the time has passed away, the president at the time, and he had changed the constitution to allow for someone else to step into power. But unfortunately, he appointed his son as the other individual to step into power. And just in this last year, this only happened this last year, there were riots there, and I followed that quite close on CNN. And a number of people died in the demonstrations, and Amnesty International said the deaths were far higher than what was reported in the media. So Rotary just seemed to be able to fit nicely with what they were hoping to achieve in their community. So, Diane, on a day-to-day basis, we could see that Rotary does have a significant influence in a community such as Lomé.
My name is Henry Heinen, and I'm interested in, as a Rotary International, local clubs, the process for deciding which project you take on. How does that work? How do you know, say, that for us now it's the right thing to go into Togo or into any other country or any other project in terms of taking that on and then seeing it through to its fruition and then maybe even follow up? And then how do you decide the next program and so on? Because this will be ongoing. And does Rotary have anything in terms of being of influence, positive influence, say, on these dictatorships in terms of what they want for the local poor people?
Thank you. For that particular project, for that particular location, what we did is I tried to identify some areas and countries that would be receptive to myself or other Rotarians to go and visit. And within one day, the responses that I've received by email from Rotarians right throughout Africa, whereas you need to come over and come and see us. It just so happened that we selected that particular area. So whenever we go over there, whenever we or individual Rotarians go over there, you can go individually or you can go as a team, well before you intend on traveling, you identify who the stakeholders are, the community stakeholders. And this is where some of the individuals in the club, you need to visit these people, you need to visit these people. So they're the... And then you recognize or you determine, you conclude which of the projects are most pressing. And because that club, particular club, was so active, they have literally dozens of projects on the go for their community with funding partners from around the world. They could be small, they could be large, but they're very active. So in terms of coming back with the documentation, myself as an individual, then I had to go to our club and I had to make the case. Okay, this is where we'd like to go. Our club raises funds to ensure the club continues to operate, set funds aside for other community events, as well as set dollars aside for international cooperation. So with the limited dollars that we had and with the partners that we have, that we were able to partner up with, it was identified that that was the most pressing project. It's not the most glamorous project, I can assure you, but it all kinds of statistics are out there in terms of health and sanitation. That is what's needed. And so that was identified, the first one. In terms of where Rotary, future commitments with Rotary, it's I can say it's endless, because there could be a Rotarian from Winnipeg who goes to India and decide that this particular project is where we should help. There could be a Rotarian that will go to the Philippines. And as long as it's in the areas of education, health, literacy, environment, those are the projects that will receive support. Rotary on an international basis, their theme in the next 2 or 3 years is water and literacy and health issues. So they make dollars available as well. And if you're going to approach and look for funding along those areas, the dollars will be freed up. But right now, Rotary International is concentrating on polio, eradication of polio. And if you're in Rotary for a long time, you just wonder what it is that they could do later. And there's lots of talk that perhaps Africa is where the concentration will be. So I hope that answered your question. Yes, Beth.
Beth Mundell-Atherstone. I'm past president of the Rotary Club of Lethbridge East. I thought it was very interesting that there are only 4 countries now where polio is still flourishing. And it's very interesting to look at which countries those are, because in Nigeria there was a big setback a couple of years ago when there was skepticism posed by the imams about whether Westerners were coming in with their immunization and actually trying to sterilize their young girls or give them AIDS. So when there's fear of the immunization, of course you're not going to immunize as widely, and that's when polio got a bit out of control in that area. I lived in Pakistan about 15 years ago for 2.5 years with our family, and Pakistan and Afghanistan, you also mentioned, were 2 of the countries where there's still polio, and there are big problems in Pakistan. Even when the government was sending out its immunization teams to immunize children against measles, mumps, rubella, various childhood illnesses, the situation in the rural areas was such that women had to have permission from their husbands to take their children to be immunized, and the husbands would not give permission for the daughters to be immunized. Again, fear of what this might do to their daughters and make them less marriageable or make them ill or something. So there are many, many, many problems that are cultural problems and social problems. So I wanted to ask the question of you of in regard to Henry's question about Rotary's influence. When we were having our discussion at our table, you were talking about the influence of last year's Rotary International president in intervening in the Nigeria instance. And maybe you could talk about that. And also, I know that during the polio plus immunizations, often soldiers in countries are included on the immunization teams. So maybe you could talk about those issues.
Thanks, Bev. When I was in Lomé, the media was often requesting some interviews, be it on television or press and radio, and it was very apparent to me then that there was some resistance in some of the countries in Africa, Nigeria being the most serious one, and they felt that yes, sterilization would result from the vaccinations. It just so happened that 2 years ago, the president of Rotary International, Jonathan Majiabi, is from Nigeria, and his influence was that he was able to go to the different countries in Nigeria and speak with health ministers, and with him were World Health Organization officials and UNICEF officials and CDC officials to convince them that this was something that needed to be done. And here was the proof with countries around the world that are certified as polio-free. So bit by bit, skepticism just disappeared, and now there's massive immunization going on in Nigeria as we speak to be able to reduce those cases and eradicate them. So that was an influence there with Jonathan Majiabi, and he was the first African to be president of Rotary International. So that helped a great deal. I mentioned right at the outset, there's about 1.2 million Rotarians in the world, 32,000 clubs. And that's one of the reasons why Rotary felt they could take this project on. Members around the world in all countries And whether they delivered the vaccines by canoe, by donkey, by camel, by boat, by plane, by bicycle, they were able to go out into the communities. Our partners were able to supervise and make sure that the requirements were followed. But there's some incidents where in those African countries, there were wars, there were skirmishes that ended, that stopped for a day or two, so that these individuals can go out and vaccinate the kids, and then the war would resume. So that's documented, and there's a lot of Rotary volunteers who perished in some of these, they call them NIDs, National Immunization Days. And it's certainly documented that some individuals did lose their lives, and it could be Rotarians from North America going over there to do a good deed. And so that's the price you pay when you want to take something on, something that large. But again, bit by bit, that last 1% is going to be the most difficult. So I hope that addressed your question. Thank you. We have time for more. Okay. That maybe you have another.
Well, thank you very much for your participation, and a very special thank you to Bernie for taking some time and sharing some of the experiences with us and the daunting task that faces all. Just to conclude, I was struck by a couple of quotes that really stood out for me, and one is by Rick DeMarinis, who is an author. And he says, "Kings and cabbages go back to compost, but good deeds stay green forever." Thank you, Bernie.